How did you select that topic?
I have no idea now. I think I was fascinated. I think the molecule was strictly my own idea.
I see.
And then I sought out Professor Ashdown to sponsor me in organic, and Professor Louis Harris to sponsor me in physical. He, the latter, had access to the big new spectrometer in the physics department. It was not noteworthy work. E. Bright Wilson was very interested at that time in that. I recall that very anxious to get the results, and I remember being very cherished at this young fellow that was trying to wanted my data before I got it published, which over the years I find is not an uncommon situation.
Did you continue in supporting yourself? Were you still a lab assistant? You were still on the faculty.
I was always a lab assistant until I got my PhD, and then I was an instructor in chemistry after that, until whatever it was, two years more after that.
Given the economic climate, as you approached the end of your PhD work, were you considering looking at career options at that point before you decided to stay on?
I think I planned to teach. But the economics at the time were pretty rough. An instructor's salary was $1,800 top, so you really had to do a lot of industrial consulting work to survive. And I recall a conversation, a long chat with Professor Frederick Keyes, who I think of some note as for his physical chemist, thermodynamics of gases. In any case, he was head of the department, and I recall kind of his counseling with me, going over every professorship and assistant professorship and associate professorship and trying to count how many years before there would be an opening. And it looked like it was a good 5, 6, or 7 years. Of course, we didn't know there was a war coming then. And I think it was also partly, in retrospect, a nice, easy way, could well have been an easy way to let me down. I wasn't all that good anyway, and I think perhaps he was a kind fellow and a nice, gentle way of suggesting it probably be a good idea if I did get a job in industry. In any event, that was the turning point, and so I turned to industry.
But you did stay on for 2 years as an instructor.
Yes.
After you completed your PhD.
Yeah.
And what did you do during that two-year period?
Well, that was kept on with this study of cyclopropane and propylene. I don't know why isomers always had a fascination for me. Here are the publications I see only one paper published, 38, Influence of Branched Chains on Optical Activity. For the life of me, I've forgotten what that was. But the other publications are 36. It doesn't look like I did very much. Well, 36, you see, was probably writing up the papers pretty much and polishing them up. And then in 37, I left.
I see.
That's about it. Oh, Jane, here's this is Armstrong, Jane.
How do you do? Well, from MIT in 37, you went to U.S. Rubber. How did that move occur?
I was rebellious at the time and wouldn't consider going with a company like DuPont and Eastman, from whom I had offers, both of them, but a little hard to recreate the state of mind at the time. Again, perhaps I was wise. Maybe the competition was too much there, maybe what, which will come up later. But in any case, I was attracted to U.S. Rubber, of all people, by one man, a Dr. Roscoe Gerke, G-E-R-K-E, an extraordinary research manager who had put together, had assembled a very, very competent group of people in Passaic, New Jersey, in their central research laboratory, utterly out of proportion to the quality of the company in general. It was through Dr. Gerke and his boss, director of research, Dr. Willis Gibbons, at that time. They did a remarkable job. I was attracted to them and accepted job there. As I recall, a big advance up to then $200 a month for the top salary they had ever given to an incoming employee at the laboratory. And they did. Dr. Roscoe Gerke placed my desk beside his in this huge, the laboratory was a converted factory or something, all open bays, and just to put in a few partitions, my desk beside his, and called me over every conference on any subject, called me to participate, and so very quickly I had a grasp of the whole business of the company, and then let me do and organize such whatever research I wanted to do. And that's how I got interested in the chemistry of vulcanization.
Were there other PhDs in this group? Or were
Well, at that time, we were, in the beginning there, we had Dr. Ruhoff, who subsequently went with Mallinckrodt. Dr. Mooney, a physicist of some standing at the time, a bit of a classical physicist, and Dr. Smallwood, I think from Hopkins, who was also a physical, was a physical chemist. This was the, these three were the, other than Gerke, were the main strength at the time that I went there in 37. We, by 39, well, and I should explain, we were plunged pretty rapidly into the GRS program because of the war coming, you see? And as soon as we wrapped that up, got it out into the pilot plant, then the management of U.S. Rubber said, because Carruthers had just really wrapped up his, or rather DuPont had finally announced, you see, nylon, and of course our management said, we must have a nylon. And so I was said, you can spend up to, I believe they said, $1 million if you'll get us a nylon. And that's where we took off with building a basic research and applied research group.
Could I come back for a moment? What year would, from the time you started until the time you're at now, where this company-wide nylon, how many years would have elapsed?
I can think. Went there in 37. my recollection would be that I worked on simultaneously on sulfur olefin reactions and on butadiene polymerization almost from the beginning, but the butadiene studies took precedence by 1939, certainly, and maybe 38, but in that period I recall having many several sessions with Bill Baker over at Murray Hill. Who was working on polymeric polyesters as coatings and insulation materials, and getting his counsel. We were trying to extract from the German patents all the information we could get in order to get on with the synthetic rubber program, and Bill Baker helped us a bit with that. That would be through about 1940, or then I would say that that process we developed there moved into pilot plant by 1941, probably, guess. What year was Pearl Harbor?
41.
Well, by 1940, I guess it must have. It was well before Pearl Harbor. Then when it went into the pilot plant, we in research were faced with a rather tough situation, and the management said we want the nylons. See, we're now looking at post-war. And for us young fellows, this was a bit of a trying time, but some bothered some of us more than others. Nevertheless, this was when I was given the job of putting this target group effort together. And my first step was to go out to Courage, University of Chicago, and interview people there. And one of those I interviewed was Frank Neal, and offered him a job, and he took it. I might say it wasn't that simple in those days. Frank Neal came out, and we grilled candidates and gave them, as they did when I went. That's why I went there. The interview was at least the equivalent of the doctorate oral.
Really?
Oh, yes. The interview was very thorough in every discipline. But nevertheless, Frank put together the fundamental group, hired Chevis Walling, Fred Lewis. That grew small. It was a small group for those days, but a big group for those days, but a small group in modern terms. And hired Plinio Tawney, Dr. Tawney from Sherwin-Williams, against the advice of Gerke, I might say, and put him in charge of the applied group.
You hired Tawney?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we had two small groups at work, but then, unfortunately, both Gibbons, the director, and Gerke were requisitioned away for government munitions plant management. They each went to a different naval ordnance plant. I helped them for a good 6 months. I spent recruiting for their plant needs, but then I came back and kept in touch with the group. However, it's hard to say in retrospect. I left, or I guess it really was fired, leave, fired, demoted, you name it, at issue over the allocation of resources between the applied group and the fundamental group. I had not learned that you'd have to build a power structure if you were to survive in this world, and was all innocence of political manipulation, and so of course I walked away from it, and volunteered for the Navy. Was accepted, but somehow the papers got held up someplace, and all of a sudden I was asked if I would go to Tennessee and help build a rayon tire cord plant in a place they knew nothing about tire cord. And my rubber experience I carried through, you see, a bit. So that was what happened.
Could we go back again to your U.S. rubber days? Did you hire Cephas Walling too, or did Mayo hire?
Mayo hired Cephas. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. I assume I must have interviewed Cephas. Mm-hmm. It was a joint thing. But my impression is that he was very much. It was Mayo's job to hire for his own group. He was head of his group.
And then, what was your responsibility with the fundamental and the applied group?
I was
as that project developed.
I think at this time, Gerke was one of either two or three department heads of the Central Research Laboratories. I was assistant department head for research. That was as distinct from the development. I believe that was the way the title went. We didn't call them sections and groups at that time.
Now, were you still involved in laboratory work, or were you primarily administering?
I was involved still very much doing laboratory work. I think. What actually happened, as best I can remember, is that I was puttering around with my sulfur olefin chemistry, what lab work I did, while managing the groups. I was assigned all kinds of additional assignments, in charge of rubber chemical liaison development with the Naugatuck Chemical Company. I was working on antioxidants, accelerators, and as part of the total research effort. I guess I did that mostly myself, but I didn't never let the rubber chemical work get into the two groups. They were to get a new nylon. That was.
I see.
They weren't to be bothered with anything else.
And did you run interference for them with management so that?
Yes. Indeed, I did. This was the trouble, that when the mature management that had built this at U.S. Rubber were called away. The second string, who Erdley Hazel became, Dr. Jordan became director, and Mr. Terhorst became department head. And these were people who had no sympathy whatever for fundamental research. And were out indeed, they turned the laboratory over seeking agricultural chemicals. they couldn't get rid of the fundamental group, but as soon as an issue came up between of allocation of it was actually analytical time between the applied and the fundamental group, that's where I had the battle and said I lost, and so I said, well then I'm out. And I drew it to a head, you see, and but it,
what year was that?
It would have been 44, I guess.
44.
Yeah, it must have been 44.
How much of interaction did you have with Mayo and Walling?
I would think, scientifically speaking, no, I may be too humble, but I think they were both so far ahead of me in their training and so on that I didn't presume to give any guidance to them whatever. Now Frank was Frank says that he wrote me later in 47 and said that he sent off a bunch of papers on copolymerization and saying, oh yes, well this is a reflection, you see, and Mr. Hazel brought up the point that you should have credit for initiating the work at the General Laboratories, a point with which I would not dispute. I pointed out, however, that you should have had the acknowledgement in the first paper 3 years ago, and the credit might look peculiar in the fourth paper of the series. And then at the suggestion of Tawney and Terry, all names except Mooney's were removed from the acknowledgement in the first paper. It was agreed that the enclosed statement would be sent to the journal and that on the remote chance that you would for some reason request it, it could be deleted in proof. And the acknowledgement was the inception of work on copolymerization in these laboratories is largely due to the early decision by Dr. Robert T. Armstrong that a study of copolymerization would be one of the best approaches to a fundamental understanding of polymerization as a whole, a decision which we feel has been amply justified. Whether that ever appeared in the journal, I have no idea. I've never seen it, so I wouldn't know.
You'll have to check that out.
If you want to take this as a copy.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, it could go in the file, in your records.
Sure.
Frank won't object.
Okay.
That's it.
Fine. Excellent.
And for what it's worth. So what I'm saying is that I was running interference for them, not directing them technically by that point.
And you also got the whole group going in the first place then back in 40-41.
With under Dr. Gerke's pushing and support and defense, yes, very much so. Yes, it was when I got my first management job, and I muffed it pretty badly in the end. But it not so badly that Mayo didn't carry on for quite a few years.
Did you have some contact with Mayo after that? Did you keep in touch with what was happening?
No. I've been a loner all my life, and I never. It's sad that I've seen Mayo a couple of times since then. I think I can't remember the circumstances. I think I was out in Sanford, maybe in the 50s or sometime. I remember being chatting with him out there. Chavis Walling, a note, a group there. My whole old group got together in February 17th, 1968. And let's see, old Chavis note says, "Dear Bob, the only trouble with this splendid occasion is that you couldn't be here too. After all, you had a lot to do with getting it all started. This was the group.
Oh, very good. Well, is there anything else we should add about that particular period?
Let's see. I don't think so.
The difficulties were compounded by the war and the top people leaving, and then...
Yes, that's right. Yes, and I think what was it, 35 by then, but this was a very uncertain feeling of any of people of that age at that time of working on something for after the war. I didn't feel very right about it.
Now, you said you tried to join the Navy.
I had my physical exam in the Newark Armory. And I'll never forget that. I recall there was a big sign saying, "Report to the examiner if you've had any of the following," and so on, among them, sinus. And so I said, "Yeah, I've had some sinus problems." "Okay, bud, we'll give you a credit. Approved." You quickly learned not to believe what you read.
Well, how did the North American Rayon situation develop?
Learning process. As I told you, I didn't know anything about power structures. The elementary human relations that a lad would get in a liberal arts college. I was a technician, pure and simple. And so I went down to Elizabethton, Tennessee, carried on some modest laboratory work while counseling and consulting with other producers of rayon regarding the building, the design, and so on of this plant. The government required other producers to pool knowledge because we had to have more rayon tire cord production in a hurry to go with the synthetic rubber, you see. However, the plant was in such bad shape and wouldn't operate, and it was in the hands. It was North American Rayon Company, which had been seized. Was a German company, had been seized by our alien property custodian, who had put in a New York financial type as president in New York office, and had left the German management in the plant. And it took me a year and a half to discover that they were sabotaging the whole effort, and there was no way you could make it known.